Hey, ¿qué tal? Bienvenidos sean todos a este noveno episodio del Gustapod. Muchísimas gracias a todos por descargar las entregas anteriores y seguir pendientes del podcast, aun cuando los episodios siguen llegando a un ritmo tan irregular, algo que ya es costumbre y de lo cual mejor ni me preocupo. En esta oportunidad el invitado es Andrew WK, un músico y productor norteamericano que muchos de ustedes conocerán por temas como Party Hard o I Love New York o She's Beautiful. Andrew era una de esas personas que por alguna razón siempre había querido invitar al Gustapod. Luego de 6 meses de intercambiar emails con su management, finalmente conseguimos un día en el que tanto Andrew como yo estuviésemos libres para sentarnos a grabar lo que escucharán a continuación. Una larga charla que tuvimos por Skype hace una semana en la que hablamos de música, de Nueva York, de cine y de estrellas porno, por supuesto. Por cierto, gracias a Lauren de Big Machine Media por aguantarse 6 meses de emails y finalmente cuadrar la entrevista. Lauren, thank you so much for making this happen. En fin, Andrew es un tipo increíble y si me preguntan a mí, este es un episodio de lujo. Sean todos bienvenidos, este es el Gustapod. Hey Andrew, welcome and thanks for accepting the invitation. It's a pleasure to have you here, man.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. I'm very pleased to be invited and very excited to be partying with you right now.
Many people are really, really aware of your career and the work you've been doing, but there might be people not very familiar with you. So just to put things in context, who's Andrew WK?
Well, I consider myself a party rock and roller, a professional partier who wanted to use entertainment, really, music and TV and talking on radio like this, any method I could to spread a feeling of excitement, celebration, and joy. And I make music that tries to express and generate that kind of excitement, energy, and joy.
Sounds good. Regarding music, how did it all started? I mean, which instrument did you play first?
Well, I started first with the piano. My parents, my dad played piano. Okay. When I was very young and was taking lessons, and I used to, as a very little baby, just be able to see him and hear him play, and obviously was fascinated by this big box with these black and white buttons that you press, and it makes this sound. So it really appealed to me, and then when my family moved to Michigan from California, they asked if I wanted to take piano lessons. I was about 4.5, 5 years old, and I began and fell in love with it, and it was a love-hate relationship. I hated practicing, but I loved playing, and that's really what introduced me to melody and rhythm and just this feeling. I would see my piano teachers, for example, playing a song that was very advanced, much harder than I was able to play, and I would get these chills in my body just from this feeling of the music, and I realized, wow, music can really make your body feel good. And then I was hooked forever.
And when did you start recording? I mean, because many people play instruments, but not everyone feels the need to actually document it. In your case, how was that relationship of playing and recording?
Well, we had a tape recorder that I would use. I had a keyboard that, of course, could play a drum beat and play a bass line and play an accompaniment and a melody. I could play all these different things at once with a keyboard my parents got me for Christmas one year. I was probably 12 or 11. That was probably when I started recording and really trying to write songs that sounded good and use the stereo mics on this tape recorder to create effects and all that. And that was a very exciting time. And then maybe a year after that or so, I got a four-track recorder, and that's when things really took off. So by high school, I was recording very heavily using this cassette four-track where I could do overdubs and record many different instruments and vocals, and I loved recording. It was just so incredible to me that I could make a recording like someone on TV or on an album or on the radio. It was really magical.
Yeah, I can imagine. And which was the first public recording? I mean, the first song that you actually shared with the world. What do you remember about it?
Well, let's see. I was in sixth grade. I recorded on that stereo tape recorder I was mentioning before. A bunch of songs that I made an album cover for, made copies on cassette, and Xeroxed the copies and sold them at my school, I think for $2 or $5 or something. And that was called Mechanical Eyes. That was actually a whole album of recordings. I think I still have a copy somewhere. I certainly hope that I do, but I remember it very well.
The Jimi Hendrix Experience, The Velvet Underground and Nico, Pearl Jam, Guns N' Roses, all these bands released amazing debut albums that seemed very difficult to top at the time. Some people might even say they never did. Your debut album, I Get Wet, was very successful as well. Did that put some sort of pressure on you? I mean, did you consciously try to make a really good second record with intention to prove you were not some sort of one-album phenomenon?
Those are... who knows? You know, it's difficult to find answers to those types of questions. And believe me, I've asked myself that. You wonder how you were able to do certain things at certain times and how you're able to do other things later and how you weren't able to do certain things before. I mean, it almost reminds me of when I was really, really a young child and how I wished I could do things that grown-ups could do.
Yeah.
And then how grown-ups so oftentimes wish they could do things that they only could do when they were children. I don't know if it's really worth wondering about. You just always try to do the best that you can with where you are at that time, you know, and I'm just grateful that anything I've put out there into the world had any kind of impact. I'd rather have, you know, a great success than no success at all. And
yeah,
I just take it just each day at a time, trying to make the best, most exciting work that I can.
Fair enough. You say you started your musical career when you were 4 years old, playing the piano. Then you decided to explore and experiment with other instruments like the drums and finally end up playing everything. I read you actually played all instruments in the Wolf album. So have you ever considered the idea of doing something like Dave Grohl's Probot?
That's a great idea. I haven't thought about it formally before, but I certainly have loved making music with other people more and more over the years. I didn't used to like working with other people so much. I mean, when I started doing Andrew WK, I really committed to this idea that I was only going to work by myself and only do Andrew WK music. But then more recently, over the last 5 years, I intentionally have been trying to go against that old impulse, and it's been very rewarding. So I'd love to continue to make music with all kinds of people.
If you could pick 5 musicians to make some kind of Andrew WK and Friends record, you know, someone you would like to work with, who would they be?
Well, I feel like I'm working with the people that I most want to work with.
Okay.
And there's things in the works that I'm very excited about. I mean, anytime I hear something that moves me, I just go out in the world and search and hope to have that feeling hit me, and then I respond to it. So, I mean, I don't have anything like a specific person or a dream.
Yeah.
I just trust that destiny will bring me where I'm meant to go and bring the people into my life that I'm meant to work with.
That makes sense. You produced Lee Scratch Perry's Repeatant record. Which other musicians would you like to produce in the future?
Wow. Well, I'm working a lot with an artist named Alistair X. Alisterex. And he is, I mean, that when I first heard his music, I was over at a friend's house and there was just this music playing in the background and it was blowing my mind. And I just had this, these moments in life where you just had these glimpses of your future, a brilliant flash of clarity that you're somehow meant to be here at this place in this time. And I just could tell I was meant to work with this person. So I'm working with him. I'm working with Sherry Lilly, a dance music artist. She's also in my band and also the woman I married.
Okay.
And she makes this very hard pounding dance music, very high energy, incredible dancing, nightclub style music crossed with fitness. It's called House Aerobics, and it's just very high energy. And then I also just finished producing an album for an artist named Baby D.
Okay.
And that will be coming out actually in a few months, later this year. And she's an incredible songwriter, makes the most beautiful music. And it just, when you get those chills inside your body, when you feel that excitement rise up from your stomach, when you encounter a song or you see a movie or you read a book or you meet a person or you go somewhere, you can tell when your body feels good. And that's all I do. I just follow that feeling wherever it takes me.
You just mentioned Alistair X, and I think he's signed by your record label, Skyscraper Music Maker, isn't he?
Yes, the first EP that we released of his was on Skyscraper Music Maker, and then that label had to change its name. to a different name, but it still basically exists.
Why did you decide to start a record label?
Yeah, there's just certain moments when it seemed very natural that it would be good to put this music out, and that we would have a way to do that through a label. It was a very basic desire to get the music out to the world, and these are people that I'm working with directly, so it made sense to have a direct way to release it ourselves. And we started this company with my business partners and a company in the UK called Cargo Records, and they manufacture and distribute it, and it's been fantastic. We're developing new music and new performers out and spreading the word.
And what kind of music does your record label is interested in? I mean, can people send you the tapes or, you know, demos and stuff?
Well, our schedule is full.
Okay.
So what comes our way, what we discover, makes sense, and that's how it works at this point. We are so full, there's only so much room and time we have for releases. But I am always looking, but there's no physical address that we accept demos at.
Well, now that we talk about your record label, you released an album of all instrumental piano improvisations called 55 Cadillac, which is really interesting considering you're known for your extremely high energy rock and roll. How do you approach that project?
Well, I tried to do the exact opposite of everything I had done before, while staying true to what I hope was my most inner self or my inner instincts about what sounds cool and what feels good to play, and just sit down and play piano and record it and release it. It was the most terrifying album recording experience I've ever had, because normally I've spent a lot of time trying to make a great album, but this wasn't supposed to be a great album. It was just supposed to be this album. And that was a big step for me, to have the courage to just release something.
And how long did it take you to record it?
About 2 hours.
Well, that's fast.
Well, it's just making up, you know, it's just playing songs. And then I edited took the best of that 2 hours and put it on the record. I really have no opinion about it. I don't know if it's good or bad, and that was the whole point.
Well, time to play a song. You're in charge of the musical selection for this episode.
And yes.
The first song you want to play is Bitch Get Me High by Juicy J, Lil Reno, and V/. Why did you pick this song?
I first heard this song. A friend of mine, an incredible artist named Andrew Strasser, he sent me the video. And when I heard the song, it felt very, very, very good to me. Everything about it just created a lot of joy, just a very strong physical feeling, and I hope that it does for you when you hear it too.
Yeah, niggas know what's going on. Yeah, fake nigga.
Hood rich, hood rich, hood rich.
I drink a lot of beer, bitch. three pills, man. I'm finna act a monkey, bitch. Go get me some liquor, cause I'm finna long dick. And if you got a fucking nigga, I feel sorry for the nigga. I'ma beat it out the frame, then put dick in your mouth, then turn you on your stomach and hit you from the back. Wait, let me hit my yak, let me swallow down this pill. Blow me a gun or they kush, then it is what it is. This a night you gon' remember when you fucking with me slay. I'm something else with myself when I'm high, yeah.
You are listening to Bitch Get Me High, the first song picked by Andrew WK, who's on the other side of the Skype, joining us from New York. You had a massive snow blizzard in New York by the end of the year. How's the weather now, Andrew?
Yes, there's a full-blown blizzard, but the snow has just stopped now. But about a week ago, during the New Year's time, there was, really was a blizzard. The whole city had to be shut down, basically. It was actually right around Christmas time, I guess. And then just today was snowing. So we have a real full-blown winter snowstorm experience here.
On the Wolf Tour, you injured on stage and broke your foot, but you didn't cancel. Instead, you decided to perform the remainder of the dates in a wheelchair. A fucking wheelchair. And I think that's how I got into your music. I think I remember watching a video of you at some music awards in which you played like three songs on the wheelchair. With a cast on your foot or something like that. With so much energy, it almost made me trash my house, man. And you look so fucking happy. It made me go out and check your music. So what did you remember about that particular episode of your life? I mean, how was it to play in a wheelchair?
It was very interesting because it was very, very different. I remember the night I broke my foot, I got it. We were playing a concert in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And there was a tangle of cords, which happens all the time on stage, of course, but somehow it got it wrapped around my foot, and I was trying to shake the cords off my foot, and in the process I kind of lost my balance and stepped down on my foot where it was completely twisted, and it was twisted so badly that it broke the bone. And I thought I just sprained my ankle, and I sprained my ankle on stage many times, and always just keep playing, because if you walk it off, it actually, by the end of the show, it's usually healed. There's no swelling. If you stop, then the swelling gets really bad, and you know, you should always try to walk it off. So I kept playing, but it didn't stop hurting, and it was hurting worse and worse. And by the end of the show, I could tell something was really bad, because I mean, it was really extreme pain. So then we went to the hospital, and they said it was broken. And we were going to Japan the next day to continue our tour. And the doctor said it would take at least 2 months to heal, and I wouldn't be able to walk on it. So we were just faced with a decision as to whether to cancel the next 2 months of touring or to keep going. And you know, I just thought very obviously about what I do. I like to move around on stage, but I'm not necessarily a dancer. Like, I'm not a ballerina or anything. You know, I'm there to sing and to play keyboard and to perform.
Yeah.
And I could still do that. You know, my hands still work. My voice still worked. And I could get around on either crutches or on stage in a wheelchair. The reason I chose the wheelchair is because then I could have my hands free and I could still roll around and get some speed going and some movement. And the wheelchair actually turned out to be a really exciting way to perform, because I had so much energy from not having to use my legs. You know, just I only had to use half my body, and so I could really put all that energy into that. It was just very clear to me that it wasn't. It did not make sense to quit, you know.
I find really exciting the whole thing about that story. And I've been a fan since I saw you rocking in the fucking wheelchair, you know. So
thank you.
Yeah,
thank
awesome.
You very much.
Awesome to hear, like, the story behind it. And, I don't know, I sense in your music some hair metal influences, a bit of punk, maybe an industrial feeling as well. Which are your musical influences? I mean, what kind of music did you listen when growing up?
I mean, I anything and everything that could get that feeling of excitement inside me. I think because of that piano training, you know, before I ever heard rock music, I was playing piano, and that's really true. I didn't have older siblings around to introduce me to stuff. So I was a little bit isolated for those early years. But the good thing about that was it allowed me just to love music based on the music. You know, it didn't matter how the band or person looked. It didn't really even matter how it sounded. If I liked the melody or the rhythm, I didn't care about the production so much. I mean, it gave me a real basic appreciation of music at its core, so that by the time I did find out about rock music, it was just like the best thing that ever happened, because not only here do you have melody, but then you have attitude and you have lyrics and you have like image and style and performance and dancing and just all these crazy other sounds, you know, production sounds and different guitar sounds and keyboard. So I just love music. There's not any kind of particular kind or style that I don't like, or, you know, I'm like so many other people. I take it one song at a time.
As many metal fans, I got into Iron Maiden because of their album covers, you know. I felt attracted to the whole Eddie thing and eventually got into the music and I loved it. And I know people who got into Rammstein or the White Stripes because they reflected a powerful image, you know. Is there a band you decided to check out because of the way they look, because of their image?
Wow, that's a great question. I certainly love image and style. It's a very exciting part of anything. I don't know that. I mean, there's a lot of bands that have amazing style that I like, but I always like their music too. That to me is the best, when a band has incredible music and an incredible look. I remember seeing AC/DC album covers and Kiss album covers especially, and being really, really sort of, not scared, but just, I thought that Kiss was going to sound like a death metal band. Because when I was growing up and finally getting into rock, that was in the 90s, so like Kiss was a very old band that I wasn't really interested in. But I assumed, just by the way they looked, oh, they must be really extreme. And then when I finally heard them, it was almost like light classic rock. So I've also loved, you know, the contradiction, how something can look like this, like a band can look like Kiss, but then they sing a song like Beth. Yeah. Or how, you know, those contrasts are really exciting to me. But as far as album covers and music, there's just so much out there. It's hard to even begin. I agree with you that the Judas Priest album covers, the Iron Maiden album covers, those made an impact on me long before I ever heard the music.
Yeah, I ask you this because you wear just white clothes, at least on stage. I actually remember you posted on Twitter you had exactly 67 pairs of white Levi jeans and 32 white Fruit of the Loom t-shirts. Is there any particular reason why you decided to wear white clothing to perform?
Yeah, I wanted to show up well against a black background. That was a... really was a huge reason. Yeah, I also wanted something that was very, I guess, easy for other people to relate to, like jeans and a t-shirt. It wasn't very fancy or hard to get clothes like that, so that anybody could potentially dress like me. And something that was also very easy for me to wear, that I didn't have to worry about getting, you know, keeping really clean, and if they got damaged, I could replace them very easily.
Yeah.
And that it was just something that would, this is what I'm going to wear. And no, I had never seen anyone else really fully commit to that particular look forever.
Me either, yeah.
So I just thought it seemed like, okay, well, maybe I can do that. You know, the athletic shoes, white jeans, regular t-shirt, a black digital watch, that's it.
You played with Mike D of the Beastie Boys, so I suppose you're familiar with the awesome I Fucking Shot That DVD, in which the Beastie Boys gave people video cameras to record the shows from different angles and stuff. So what do you think about fans doing recordings of the shows they attend? There are bands with strong restrictions when it comes to audio and video recordings. Some bands even went as far as banning photo cameras. Obviously, with all mobile phones having cameras now, they're a bit fucked. But the thing is that I honestly don't understand how can a pirate recording can affect a band in any way. Maybe I'm missing something, but it just makes no sense to me.
It's an interesting phenomenon for me personally. I mean, I have many thoughts and views and observations about the issue in general, but as it applies to NWK, I just don't care at all. I mean, people can film whatever they want, record whatever they want, and they can even release it and try to make money from it if they can. It'd be nice if they gave some to me, but for me personally, it hasn't been a big problem. I've been able to make enough money from other things that I don't need that extra dollar from the guy who sold, you know, a live recording of one of our shows.
Yeah.
The fact that he took the time to do that, he's supporting the band. He's supporting me just by creating a demand and creating that content. And I think it's exciting. It's like flattering to me. It's that someone would even care enough to do that.
Yeah, that's the way I see it. But as I'm not a musician and I don't make a living by playing music, I was kind of curious to know the opinion of someone who does. But anyways, you play with DMC and many others a cover version of It's Tricky at the Jelly Pool Party last year.
Yes, yes.
How was it? I mean, that's history right there.
That was a tremendous honor. I've met Daryl and worked with him several times before at different events and parties and concerts, and he was always so nice, like, really amazing guy. I mean, just an incredible, incredible presence and spirit, and really, really amazing just to be around him. And then when I got the invitation to actually perform with him, which I had never done officially, I'd interviewed with him, I'd take pictures and like talk and hung out, but to actually play a song, and not any song, but It's Tricky.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite songs by them. It's the level of excitement and energy in that song is, again, it just makes you want me like want to jump through the roof.
Yeah, it was amazing to see you playing this with a bunch of people on stage.
I'm very grateful. It's those moments that just make me, I can't believe that I get to do that stuff, you know?
Do you remember listening to Walk This Way at the time it was released?
Yeah, I remember hearing and seeing that video, and I don't really know what I thought of it. The rap, by the time I got really into rap, it was like Vanilla Ice and Young MC and Will Smith. Who else? I mean, like Snoop Doggy Dogg, when Doggy Style came out, my younger brother actually got it first, and I was freaked out by it. Like 2 Live Crew and that stuff freaked me out because it was so adult. But then the music just it won me over eventually, and I couldn't get enough of it. And I actually stole the Doggy Style CD from my brother that I told I told on my brother. I got him in trouble with my mom for having that CD, and then in the end, I ended up taking it.
Why?
Oh, because I thought he was like, you know, 6 years old, and I was like, Mom, I don't know if he should. I was being weird. I was kind of a nerd in that way. You know, but I really was scared. Like, it scared me that my brother was listening to what I thought was like really adult music.
Did you perceive that fusion of rock and rap like the musical breakthrough it eventually represented?
I don't know. It doesn't seem that exciting to me in that way. It just seems okay. It just seems like great music. But again, it happened a little bit. I mean, I was really, really young at that time, so I wasn't there to really appreciate how powerful it might have been. How old would I have been? Like, not even 10 years old?
Yeah.
So I realize now how powerful and important and exciting it is, and it would have been. But at the same time, it's, you know, people have always made music, and it's always going to cross over in interesting different ways. It's similar to me how like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones took the black music from back then and crossed it over, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, time to play another of the songs you picked for this episode. Alistair X, On Your Feet. Is that right?
Yes, On Your Feet. This is a musician I've been working with, and we released this song, and I think it's one of his best songs, so I wanted to share it with people.
Great, let's hear it.
Torn from the corners of the ruins I ran, on your feet or on your knees. I was a young lad on you shake.
You are listening to On Your Feet by Alistair X. Andrew, you have a pretty strong fan base on Twitter. Over 100,000 followers the last time I checked. Why did you get into Twitter? I mean, I know it feels just right to do it, but I notice people get into Twitter for many different reasons. Some people are looking for recognition and fame, other ones to share the things they find interesting or make cheap jokes 24/7, which is completely fine by me. But in your case, what's attractive about Twitter? Is it a marketing tool or just a place to have fun and party?
Well, I've always, I mean, I remember when the internet began, and I was really blown away by this idea that you could communicate over the computer, that you could talk to someone, like chat rooms. To me, that was just the most amazing thing. I don't know why it was. I mean, it's less amazing in a way than the telephone.
Yeah.
But for I guess the idea that you could use the screen, because for so long the computer, it just seemed like, you know, I could type my book report on the computer, I could play some games on the computer. But then this idea that you could go in through the computer into somewhere else in the world was really mind-blowing, and I've never gotten over that. In fact, I just continue to be blown away by it. And everything that's happened with the internet, especially this new version of the internet with social networking, has just continued that amazing tradition. And the fact that I can call someone up on the phone, I can go visit someone face to face, I can go visit a lot of people, but the fact that I can communicate an idea or tell something to 100,000 people at once all around the world instantly, I mean, that is magic.
It is.
And I just, that's what I think of it. That, to me, it's just this amazing, exciting extension of the human spirit to want to communicate and to want to be in contact with people. And if I can say something about partying and keep someone in that mindset of having fun and partying and enjoying their life, that to me is what it is. It's like, it's just another way of entertaining people and using technology or whatever I have at my hands to spread this good feeling.
I agree with you, and now that you talk about feeling good and keeping a positive mindset, you're well known for being a party hard kind of guy, but many of your lyrics are not just plain fun, some of them are quite heartfelt and meaningful. You talk about love, you talk about friendship, about giving it all in life. Sounds a bit cliche, but your whole attitude kind of makes it feel honest. In fact, you've been giving motivational speeches in the past. What was the moving force behind those efforts? Why did you start doing it?
It was another way to generate that feeling of joy, or hopefully. I never had planned to do lecturing or public speaking or anything like that, but it's not too different from doing an interview like this. It's just a chance to use words and conversation to try to reach a similar place of excitement, of motivation. And getting up on a stage with a keyboard or a guitar or a microphone to sing or play a song, that's one way to do it. But also getting up on the stage and just speaking with people, is you can get to that same place. And so there's just many different ways, again, to try to party. And all of this to me is that. It's like celebrating life and being in a good mood, you know?
Speaking of joy, in the U.S., there is an air guitar championship. And I've seen you a couple of times doing air guitar improvisations on your webcam parties and stuff. For me, there's an element of freedom and I don't know, fantasy strongly connected to air guitar or air drums, which I play way too many times during the day. But for you, what's so exciting about air guitar?
Well, air instruments, like you said, air drumming, I think is, to me, right, just
it's
as
amazing.
In fact, I might play air drums more than I would play air guitar. It's more primal to me. But again, the electric guitar there really, to me, is no better instrument than electric guitar. There's no distance, there's no separation between the spirit, for a good player at least, between the spirit of the performer and the sound that comes out. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's so expressive. It's just so much expression. And the funny thing is that just doing that motion, the physical side of guitar playing happens to be extraordinarily expressive too. The way you move when you play guitar happens to look really cool. It feels good to do. It's like dancing or something. Same with drumming. Drumming just looks really cool. People look cool when they play music, you know? It's one of the great reasons to do it.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you on that. Have you seen the film It Might Get Loud, in which Jimmy Page, The Edge, and Jack White share their views about the electric guitar?
Yes, I am aware of the movie. I have not seen it yet.
Well, I don't know if this is the real reason, but I think each one of them represents a particular decade, you know? Like Jimmy, the 70s, The Edge, the 80s, and Jack White, the 90s. Would you pick somebody else?
Oh, I mean, there's just so many. It's hard to even know where to begin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe all the guitar players that can represent, you know, the sound of a decade.
Well, like Phil Manzanera from Roxy Music.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite guitar players, and I find that he represents a part of an era that is often underappreciated. I mean, he like Lou Reed as well. Yeah. I would say. Is one of my favorite guitar players. I don't think there's a better guitar player than him. Keith Richards, of course. These days, I think. I mean, who are some of the? I mean, Brian May, Angus Young.
Okay, well, I Get Wet front cover has been extremely popular. There are like T-shirts and stickers and bandanas and skateboards, shot glasses, tattoos, everything. I suppose you were not aware at the time of the relevance that photograph would have in the future, but after 10 years or so, why do you think the bleeding nose image is so powerful? I mean, what do you think people find attractive in it?
I have no idea what they would find attractive in it. I mean, except that it's, to me, it's a violent image that it, at the same time is not violent at all. I mean, seeing blood always is a bit intense,
yeah.
But I feel like everybody has probably had a bloody nose, and you can easily have a bloody nose without anything necessarily traditionally violent happening at all. It can happen from dry air or a broken blood vessel or something like getting punched in the face, for sure. But I like that it was something, like a bloody nose is as common as, I mean, one of the most common things I could think of in a way.
Yeah.
Yet that was very shocking. And again, I had never seen anyone do it. I never seen anyone put a bloody nose on their album cover.
Did you punch yourself?
Well, that's a long story. That's
yeah.
That's something I used to talk about quite a bit. And actually the reason I was advised to stop and also agreed was that I don't want to encourage young people.
That's okay. That's completely fine.
Yeah. Especially now I have a TV show where I'm with a lot of young people, and you know, it's not about punching yourself in the face.
I was about to ask you just that. 2 years ago, you started filming Cartoons Network Destroy Build Destroy, which is a TV show in which you and the teams involved in the game, most of them young people, trash all kinds of objects with explosives and rocket launchers and bazookas, then build the vehicles out of the wreckage, and then destroy them again, which is brilliant. How would you describe the experience of being in that show?
It's life-changing. Life-changing and amazing. I've always loved television, working in it ever since I got to make a music video or play on TV. It's just the atmosphere of the cameras and the huge team of people making this show that you're working so hard to make something that it's just light and sound on a screen, you know, and speakers. It's a very strange phenomenon, and I just fell in love with it. So getting to make a show where we get to blow things up and I get to work with teenagers and we get to have that kind of crazy, fantastic fun. I mean, it's like a fantasy for any young person, really of any age, to be able to blow things up.
Yeah, amazing.
And then I get to be at the center of it. It's just been a great privilege.
How did you
we have more episodes coming.
How did you end up hosting the show?
Well, I had been working with Adult Swim, which is part of Cartoon Network, and I had appeared on a show they have called Aqua Teen Hunger Force and made a song with the creators of the show, which was also featured in the movie soundtrack, the Aqua Teen movie, and really became friends with the Cartoon Network folks. And we filmed a pilot episode of a show to see what it was like with me hosting.
Okay.
Because I'd never really hosted a whole show in this way, and then they were looking for someone to do this Destroy Build Destroy. When I heard the concept, I was in. It was just a no-brainer.
What's really curious is that you're all dressed in white from head to toes. Has it been problematic at all? I mean, white clothing in the middle of big explosions and dust and debris and everything.
Well, I've never been afraid of getting dirty, but I must say
Maybe the producers, you know?
I have many, many, many sets of the clothes with me. I change throughout the day to keep them white, but they do also get dirty, and I've always been okay with that. I've never been afraid of getting dirty, and that's a good thing.
Andrew, from my point of view, you have managed to create an impact on both mainstream and underground culture. And you live in New York, and you love it. Anyone familiar with your first record can tell. So, do you agree with the millions of people who consider New York City the center of the world?
Well, yes. I mean, it's a funny thing because I don't normally pick favorites, but I'm here for a very particular reason in that way, in that I can't think of any other place I'd rather be. There's a lot of places I love to visit, and I would even love to live for a long time, but this is where I can't really imagine living the rest of my life anywhere else except here, because of that reason, because it feels like this is humanity. Yeah. This is the human race, to best represent it.
And how do you think this perception, this vision of yourselves, the New Yorkers, influence creativity in the city? How does being in the center of the world push things forward?
Well, there's just this incredible sense of opportunity here, and that's something I always keep in mind and kept in mind a lot when I first moved here and was trying to deal with the higher prices and the more intense lifestyle and the faster pace. The reason people deal with that is because of the opportunity. The more you give to the city, the more it gives back to you, and even just staying here takes a lot, but if you have the energy and put the energy into just living here, it will pay you back. And I'm a perfect example of that. I don't think I could have done, you know, a lot of people say you can do what you would do anywhere, but to me, this whole thing has a lot to do with New York.
What do you think New York is losing as the years goes by, if it's losing anything at all?
Well, it loses an equal amount for whatever it gains, and that's just the nature of any city. They're always changing. It wouldn't be New York City if it didn't change every day. So I appreciate and respect what was here before, and I'm excited about what's to come. There's really no way to fight it, and getting too sentimental or nostalgic, it just becomes painful. It always seems like it was better before in a way because, you know, those are your memories, but it's just as important to be able to look around you and appreciate the golden age and the good old days that are happening right now.
Fair enough. It's time for us to play another song, Andrew, and we're going to listen to Get Your Ass Rock by Project Pad, B/ and Juicy J. What's exciting about this song?
Well, just to tell people a little bit more about who these musicians are, Juicy J is in a band called 3-6 Mafia, which is a very huge group and has been very, very successful. International smash hits. But he also does the solo work, and his brother is Project Pat. So they're actually family members, and they make very, very intense music as solo artists. And after I first heard that, the first song we listened to, Bitch Get Me High, I just started exploring and looking at more songs they had. And this one, like B/ is one of the greatest rappers I've ever heard. Just one of the most amazing voices and personalities. Not to mention Project Pat and Juicy J. And just everything about this song is exciting to me.
Bullets. streets of the ghetto. Gangster, no feeling in the world like losing your last. Niggas get the blind up when they low on they cash. I heard flossing in this hood, you sub to get your ass wall. I heard flexing in this hood, you sub to get your ass wall.
Stun on the nigga while they broke, or get your ass raw. Face down, nigga on the floor, for not thinking smart. Real niggas out here with that money, we gon' stay low key. We ain't finna be a crash dummy, you better believe. Real niggas stack and just stay at home. Real niggas pass the sack and put some of they niggas on. Fake niggas with that flodge and shit, arguing shit, probably starving, acting like they hardin'. Real talk, nigga, where I come from, niggas don't last long. Niggas on that fake list, then we gon' holler at y'all. Y'all niggas better stop that stunt out there. For a nigga, find your body in a trunk somewhere.
Ain't no feeling in the world like losing your last. Niggas get the blind up when they low on they cash. I heard flossing in this hood, you sub to get your ass raw. I heard flexing in this hood, you sub to get your ass raw. Ain't no feeling in the world like losing your last. Niggas get the blind up when they low on they cash. I heard flossing in this hood, you sub to get your ass raw. I heard flexing in this hood, you sub to get your ass raw.
Yes, sir, it's 4 in the morning and I'm ski masked up. I ain't got no dope for sale, so I'm finna re-up. I know a nigga got 10 bricks in his house, so I'm finna go put the pistol in his mouth. I'm on a mission and I'm going by my damn self. The last nigga went with me, almost got love. Almost got a nigga caught, man, fuck that. I keep a sawed off pump for a witness. Nobody move, move, nobody get hurt, hurt. He tried to fight back and end up getting murked, murked. So I got away free with a duffel bag, bag. 10 bricks, brick,
gangsta, Rizzy,
like losing your last. Niggas get the blind up when they low on they cash. I heard flossing in this hood, you sub to get your ass raw. I heard flexing in this hood, you sub to get your ass raw. Ain't no feeling in the world like losing your last. Niggas get the blind up when they low on they cash. I heard flossing in this hood, you sub to get your ass raw.
Project Pat, V/Slash, and Juicy J, Get Your Ass Robbed, the third song picked by Andrew WK for this episode. Andrew, seems like every man at some point of his life dreams about opening his own bar and live happily ever after. And you did just that. In 2008, you and your friends opened a nightclub called Santos Party House, not in the beach, but in New York. How would you describe the experience?
It's probably the biggest project I've ever been involved with, and it just makes me feel very thankful. It was like going to business school. It was so challenging. I mean, to open a brand new business in any city is intense, but to open a nightclub, a concert hall specifically, was
in New York.
Yeah, in New York City, in Manhattan. There hadn't been a new venue like this in downtown Manhattan in over 20 years. That shows you how difficult. Yeah. So it was, but again, here's a chance for my friends and I to give back to this city that's given so much to us and create a place that can be a venue for new artists to perform at, for people to go and discover music, for people to go and have fun, to celebrate, to drink, to dance, you know, and to be able to provide that is a great privilege.
Yeah, and it kind of makes sense, considering, I don't know, your body heart philosophy and your enthusiasm and your optimism and your energy, you know. From my point of view, it just feels right, you're doing this.
Well, thank you. Yes, it was a natural extension, another way to get at the same feeling. Just like music, this is like a physical embodiment of the party attitude.
When you're in New York, do you ride a lot on the subway?
Yeah, I use the subway and taxis. I like them both. The subway can sometimes be much faster and easier than the taxi. Like the other night, for example, on New Year's Eve, I was doing a show with Sherry Lilly, a New Year's Eve party, and there was no way I could get there in a taxi. We just weren't moving. So then I take the subway and you get there very quickly. But the fun thing about a taxi is that you get to look out the window at the city as it's passing by. It's one of the most amazing, and it's just incredible. It really is. But the subway is also amazing because you get to look at all the people there.
Yeah, I ask you this because you did some solo shows in the past. with a CD player, a keyboard, and a microphone, and you still manage to call the attention of many with a few resources. So when you go on the subway or in the streets, I don't know, and you come across with one of the many musicians playing in the streets to make a living, do you stop and listen to them? Do you take the time to see what they got?
Almost every time, if I'm not in a hurry or running late for some appointment, and I that's, you know, the first person who's ever asked me any kind of question about that, and it's amazing, actually. The New York street performers are one of the greatest things about this city. I mean, just street performers are one of the greatest things about any city.
Yeah.
And New York, of course, has some of the best musicians you'll ever hear.
Yeah.
And some of the most amazing, like my wife the other day took pictures of this like 6-year-old boy playing classical piano in the subway while his father passed around the hat to collect money.
Yeah.
And he was amazing. And you'll hear just the most beautiful music. And I always try to tip them and give them good money to encourage them to keep doing it, because it's such a beautiful thing to hear in the middle of all this commotion, this beautiful music.
You've been living in New York for a while now. And when people go to New York, they usually have a pretty good idea of what they want to see. You know, all the classic touristic places and monuments and stuff. But could you suggest a place that is not like the typical touristic attraction, you know, like a place some people might be missing when going to New York?
Well, first of all, I mean, I will say that as long as I've lived here, it's only been recently that I've gone to some of the classic tourist attractions.
Okay.
And guess what? They're all amazing. And that's the reason they're so popular, because they really are incredible, incredible experiences. Like going to Radio City Music Hall, it's one of the most beautiful places in the whole world. It really is. Just, it's an incredible place. Going to the top of the Empire State Building is an amazing life experience. It just is. So I really recommend doing all those things. In addition, well, one thing I would say that's really fun is this restaurant. There's a restaurant I really, really like. But to me, it's more than just the best food. It's very, very good food. It's more than just a fun place to eat. It's a really cool feeling inside the restaurant, and it feels very New York to me. It's called Big Nick's, like Big Nick.
Okay.
Yeah, Big Nick's, Broadway and 77. It's very famous. It's been there for years. It's open 24 hours. You can go there any time of day. The best hamburgers, the best pizza, and an amazing, amazing physical restaurant space inside. Like the amazing service, amazing people in there. It's just, going there makes me happy to be alive.
Wicked. You know, you have a song called Party Till You Puke.
Yes.
And just today, I was talking to a friend who told me he cannot self-induce it. Not even with the legendary technique of putting a finger down your throat, like many people do. Apparently, he ate too much and wanted to puke in order to feel better, but he just couldn't. Do you have any particular way to induce puking when you need it?
Well, I've done the fingers down the throat. That has always worked for me, and I've done that many times. It really... There's times when your body wants to throw up, but it might not quite be ready yet.
Yeah.
And you might as well just help it along and get it over with, because
yeah,
you feel so much better. I mean, it's really one of the most amazing feelings in life to finish puking and have that nausea go away and that relief of, I mean, it's an incredible, almost euphoric feeling.
And you know what? I recently discovered there's a device called Sonic Nausea, a little thing that produces high frequency sound waves that will make people who hear it to feel queasy or suffer from headaches, intense irritation, sweating, nausea. You know, it sounds terrible, but at the same time, it's just kind of cool, because it would be like a device to help you puke when you can't. Isn't that fantastic?
That is. And that just goes to show how incredible science and technology is.
It's amazing.
It is. The power of music and sound.
Is there any other place you would like to live, at least for a while?
Well, it's interesting, yeah, because I was just thinking about this, because I have a friend who lives in Berlin, and he wants to come to New York for about a month or something, and wants to trade apartments with someone. And of course, he's my friend, so part of me would really just like to be here and hang out with him.
Yeah.
But then another part of me is like, wow, it'd be amazing to be able to go and live in Berlin and have a house just ready to go.
Yeah.
It's free. I love visiting countries, but I realize that you can't really experience it unless you're there for an extended period of time.
Do you come to London frequently?
Yeah, I have been coming there certainly more often than a lot of other countries over these last years because the record label is there. I have a lot of friends there. I've been also performing with a band called Current 93, who is who's based out of England. And so I've been spending a lot of time there, but also playing quite a few shows of my own in England at the All Tomorrow's Parties Festival. And shows in London as well. So it's where we first released our album and really launched the whole InterWK thing. So it's a very important land for me.
Do you like England? Do you like London?
I love it. I think it's incredible. It's incredible. I love it more and more every time I go. And actually, the more time I've spent and being able to meet people that live there really enabled me to fall in love with it in a much deeper way.
Well, I'm gonna radically change subjects here. What's your favorite porn star?
Well, it's hard to pick favorites. It's always hard for me to pick favorites when I like so many different things.
Well, let's say maybe not a favorite, but a memorable one.
Well, as far as like a performer and how she has occupied the adult industry, I gotta give a huge tip of the hat to Sasha Grey.
Yeah,
I mean, of course, she's very, very beautiful,
yeah,
and she's tremendous in her movies. But her ability to not only do what she's done, but to say that she was going to do it. I mean, we know how rare that is. We've seen how rare that is, not just in the adult industry, but just in Hollywood in general. For a young person to come out of nowhere on their own terms and to set very unique goals in a very outlandish and unusual way and then achieve them.
Yeah.
Is it's incredible. So I just have tremendous respect for her as a performer and as an individual.
Have you met her like personally?
I haven't met her yet in person. I've worked with her and spoken to her through the computer and recorded stuff with her. She recorded for the Lee Scratch Perry album.
Oh really?
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, she did vocals on the song Poom Poom.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
She did a tremendous job, yeah, and we've stayed in touch, and she's always been very kind, and we've come close to meeting several times, but we're both been traveling so much that it's been trickier than we had anticipated, but I'm sure I'll meet her someday, and I look forward to that.
Is there any porn star you have met personally?
Well, I met Joanna Angel when she first launched Bernie Angel.
Yeah.
And I've just, again, been very impressed and very excited with how successful she's been. I mean, she really did it, as far as I can tell, all completely on her own and totally dominated. You know, it's just done very, very, very well and has worked extremely hard and has never been anything but kind, professional, just amazing vibe.
Do you surf the net a lot? Like, do you spend much time on the internet?
Yeah, I'd say a fair amount. Ever since I was able to start using it in conjunction with my work.
Yes.
I mean, it allowed me a type of productivity that I had never really had before.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the time before email, and I'm able to really appreciate how powerful it is. It's crazy. And I also appreciate the amount of discovery. I love being able to look things up and learn about them instantly. It's very, very, very powerful. So I try to respect it and appreciate it and use it for all that it's worth.
If you come across someone who doesn't have a clue about the internet, some sort of caveman who has never been online or had any contact with the internet, which website would you pick to show him what the internet is all about and the dimension of it?
Well, that's a great question. It's one I have been talking about with my friends recently, because I think at this point that YouTube is sort of the internet to me.
Yes.
In that, between YouTube and Wikipedia and Google, of course. But if I want to, if I find out about something, meaning a place, a person, of course, a musical artist, a movie, a TV show, anything that I could see or hear or learn about, I'll look it up on YouTube first, because it's the most dynamic media experience. I can read about it on Wikipedia, but maybe I can see some TV clip. Maybe I can see a documentary. Maybe there's an interview with this person. Maybe there's a whole movie about it.
Speaking of movies, have you seen the Anvil documentary?
Yes, I was fortunate enough to go to the premiere, the New York premiere of that movie, and also to perform with Anvil several times and hang out with them, and they're incredible guys. I mean, I was very blown away by the movie and very, very moved by it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I have the honor to have Lips on the podcast a few episodes ago, and it's incredible to see the reactions the movie has generated. Do you feel that way at some point in your life? I mean, struggling to get to the place you really wanted to be?
Well, sure, in a way. I mean, I think everybody can relate to that movie. That's why it's so powerful and why the storytelling is so well done, is that they've taken what really, for most folks, is a very hard-to-relate-to story and made it extraordinarily relatable. I mean, most people don't live like those guys live, including me. But that's what makes it so powerful, is that at the heart of it all, it's a very human movie, just about the human experience in general.
Well, imagine your house is on fire. I hope it's not, but...
Thank you.
Yeah, if it was on fire and you had the chance to go inside and save just one single object, assuming there are no human beings or animals inside, if you could just have the chance to save one valuable object, what would that be?
Probably my keys.
Okay, the keys of your burning house.
Yes, yes, because then I could probably hopefully get back in and claim more items later. But and also I'd like to lock the door once I leave, just so that no one could loot in case the fire goes out or something.
That's okay. That makes sense.
And in case someone might try to run in, like a child might try to enter the place and get burned.
So you're keeping them away?
Yes, I'm keeping people out and keeping my belongings in. It's a win-win.
That's good. You're smart and responsible.
Well, thank you.
All right, last question. Hello, you asked me on Twitter to ask you what to do when the party's over.
Throw another one.
Easy as that.
Yeah, just party.
Well, finally, I wonder if you could suggest me someone I can invite to the Gustapod, you know. This is some sort of networking project, and I love to chat with people, learn from them, and, like, you know, anyone like this.
Yes, yes. So I have a great person. I think you should interview Alistair X, because he's very good at interviews, and I think you would have an amazing conversation with him because your questions are so good.
Thank you, man. Sounds awesome. Well, Andrew, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, man. Thank you very much for your time. If you happen to be in London, give me a shout. Maybe we can go down the pub and have some beers.
Okay, I would love that. Thank you so much for your really excellent preparation and questions. I mean, it really was one of the best interviews I've done in a long time.
Well, good to hear, man. Well, just before we end this, what are your future plans regarding music? Any albums? Any tours?
Yeah, I'm going to Australia in a couple of weeks, and then going to Japan in April, and then recording a new album all during this time to release sometime later this year.
Well, hopefully we'll see you on tour then.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. And please do keep in touch. I'm going to have Alistair X email you very soon.
Well, thank you. Take care, man. See you soon.
Okay, you too. Take care.
Bye. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Now is the time for me to rise to my feet. Wipe your spit from my face. Wipe these tears from my eyes. Wipe these tears from my eyes. I've got to take my life back. One chance to make it right. I've got to have my voice be heard and bring meaning to this life. 'Cause I'm trusted for nothing. I've been led astray. I've been tried and tested, but I won't accept defeat. Now I've done things I regret. And it's time to reverse the roles. Now I just wanna make good on all the promises I have made. I will be heard. Now is the time for me to rise to my feet.
I will be heard.
Wipe your spit from my face. Wipe these tears from my eyes. Tears from my eyes. I've got to take my life back.
chance to make it right. I'm gonna have my voice be heard.